Today on the AV Podcast, we invite Jan Michael Nation as we talk about the rise of DeMar DeRozan, the current state of the Toronto Raptors and their back-to-back litmus tests versus Cleveland and Golden State, which players and teams has caught our eye so far this season, a little bit of Donald Trump winning the election, plus much more. To subscribe to the podcast shows and the blog, make sure you subscribe to SouthShoreAV.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAV.com. It's the AV Podcast with Cal C on South Shore AV Radio. Let's do it.
Welcome to the AV Podcast with Cal C on South Shore AV Radio.
So today on AV, we welcome back the second guest I ever had on the podcast, my friend, brother, Rams legend, that's my teammate, yo, former professional basketball player, and someone who was definitely feeling himself a little too much when the Raptors were struggling in the playoffs. Ladies and gentlemen, listen to the podcast, please welcome Jan Michael Nation to the AV. Welcome, sir. What up?
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thanks for bringing me back for a second go. Love the intro. You really warmed me up. Really nice.
Yeah,
I appreciate that, my brother.
Yeah, I try, man. Including the little the Raptors dig, but you know.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that. Don't worry, I saw that.
Episode 2 of the podcast for all you listeners, in case you forgot. But yeah, but you know, it turned out to be true in a lot of cases, so I can't even knock you.
Yeah. Thank you.
I can't even knock you. And it seems like you got some news to celebrate. Recently, you were entered into the Rising Rams Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah. It was quite a very humbling experience. I don't even know to this day who nominated us, but someone nominated our championship team in 1999.
Okay.
And especially with the success of the current Rams team, it was kind of fitting, like, just to remember that we were the first champions. And, it was a great, chance to meet up with, catch up with the guys. I haven't seen them in over 15 years for some of them.
Yeah.
So it was a nice chance to, reconnect and establish new friendships, as well as, being humbled being inducted into the Hall of Fame. So it was a good moment. My mom was there. I was happy for her to see it. She's been a part of this process for a long while. So it was very humbling. Felt blessed and very appreciative.
No doubt. I can imagine. I saw the pictures on Instagram. I was like, okay, Nation, you're showing off, man. A little bit, you know.
Oh my lord, man.
Slow down the shine a little bit, you know.
Listen, man, you know I don't post much pictures, so when I do it, it was something special. So I wanted to document that moment, and a lot of the kids that I coach and play with at times, they're looking me up online. They don't see much of me. So this is like a proof.
I know.
Of some existence.
It's true. I swear, everything past 2006 or something like that, it's like you don't exist. It's just hearsay.
Yeah, I know.
It's shameful.
Yeah, but it's all good.
Yeah.
The memories will last forever.
Yeah, no doubt. Like I said, man, congrats on that once again. And of course, this happened before, Trump got elected.
Man, was that something? Yeah.
What's your quick thoughts on that?
Well, it's interesting. First and foremost, my mom called it. For those who don't know, my mom is Carly Nation. She used to work for CFTO News, or CTV, I should say. And so we had a bet that she said that Trump is going to win. She said he's going to get nominated as a Republican leader and he's going to win the election. She called it. I said, okay, I believe Hillary's going to win, and the winner, loser takes winner out for dinner. And leading up to, I've been checking all the different news networks to follow it, and everyone had Hillary up by 4 or 5 points heading into the down the stretch, and on election night, I was in shock. And so, I was just like, I just couldn't believe it. I could not believe it.
So did your mom get the steak? Did she get it well done?
We have yet to coordinate. We have yet to coordinate our schedules yet. So it's going down. Don't worry. She keeps reminding me about it. And now the family members are trying to jump in. So that's the joke. But yeah, this comes to show you once again how great of a country Canada is. a lot of people, you know, through my travels for overseas, I always say this, Canada's the best country to live in, by far. I would not want to be an American citizen at this present time, especially with this man coming into power.
Or an immigrant or a minority.
Well, you know what? It's kind of early. It's kind of early to see. You got to give him a chance to see what he could do. But you won't see really anything implemented for another maybe year or two.
Yeah.
To see what he's going to do, and it's kind of scary. It just puts you in reality. Sometimes you feel that you've come far as a united front, and then you have these reality checks to put you in perspective on things.
Well, it's funny because I remember when Bush got elected, I remember having like a feeling, like an eerie feeling a little bit. Yeah. But for this one, honestly, you know,
This one hit the soul, man.
Yeah,
like,
it was uneasy. It was shocking, but you know what? I feel like this year, before we start talking about the NBA and everything else, I feel like this year is like a wake up call in terms of 2016 and just with all the police shootings and everything else, and then seeing this, like, I just think it's this year's is the year of the wake up call, and of course, a lot of the deaths has been happening this year too.
Yeah.
My fear is.
Sorry to cut you off, but my fear is like an open civil war amongst all races. Like, you know what I mean? It's just like, it's like the hatred that this guy
incited
with his campaign. You've never seen that at that stage. You know, but you gotta give it to the man, though. Out of 16 competitors, he blew out all the other Republican running mates to get the nomination, and he came from behind. They said that after the second debate, they said that he needed a miracle to come back.
Yeah.
And man, oh man, this is like stunning.
Yeah, I seen a meme of Hillary going for the layup. With her head on Iguodala's body, and then with the Donald with LeBron's body, his head on his body, blocking the shot off the glass. That's what it seemed like.
She's taken some losses in her 30-year campaign or political career. This is one that puts you out. This is one that's going to hurt for the rest of her life.
Yeah. Oh yeah. For sure. She was that close. But like I said, It's the year of the wake up call, man, but the thing is, at the same time, I see the silver lining in that. I think it's a good thing, and because I'm just my mentality or perspective on it is, what are we gonna do from here? You know what I mean? Now we're seeing this, and you're gonna see what's gonna happen. But what are we gonna do as a people from here? So that's, and I think that is funny because I remember saying it, and then I remember seeing, not to say, of course, this guy bit it for me because he didn't, but I seen a few people posting that on Facebook, including David Banner, talking about like, this is a, especially for black people, this is a great time for, you know, because with all this stuff that's about to happen, he's like, okay, this is our chance to really step up. So, you know, let's see what happens. But it is a trying and a sad time that, you know, the fact that everything that he's said in, you know, during his campaign, and now we're here, you know, but
time will tell the tale. Will tell the tale.
No, it definitely is what it is. So let's get into some of the NBA stuff right now. Okay, so you know what? Let's start off with tonight's game, as this is being recorded on Wednesday night right after the Golden State Warriors played the Toronto Raptors at the ACC. And, you know, Golden State won that off. Before I let you go, I'll just say this. Current state of the Raptors, I actually think they seem at least to be approaching this season as a motivator from what happened in the playoffs last year, especially DeRozan, which we'll definitely touch on him in a moment. But I think there's a certain level of intensity there. I like how the rookies are playing, especially Siakam. He's playing really well. We haven't gotten Sellinger yet, you know. So there's some positivity thing. There's some positive things that are coming down the pipeline for the Raptors. But at the same time, it's these last two nights, because they played Cleveland the night before. These last two nights it kind of shows you where they are in the totem pole of the league. So, like, even though we're really high, and I think the Raptors are, I would say, the second best team in the conference, and they should probably finish out that way, regardless of what people thought about Indiana or Boston, including myself. Mm-hmm. These two nights showed you there was a definite tier, and we're not at that premium tier.
I think they made huge strides last season.
Yeah,
and I think especially with DeRozan and Lowry, more in particular DeRozan, playing with the U.S. Team USA in the Olympics, winning a gold, that experience with those guys, training with them and seeing that top-tier level every day in practice definitely helped him. You could see that he's a lot stronger when he attacks the basket. Mm-hmm. He's more, there's more of a purpose to what he's doing. He's more efficient in the sense of getting a shot off. He still takes the toughest shots. This streak he's on is quite remarkable and amazing, and it's a testament of his work ethic. But with that said, I got to talk to the coaching. I think he works too hard to score. I think the offense should be a little bit more. Coaching staff has to implement a simpler offense so he could score easy bunnies, because he has to really work to get these points. And you saw today, in today's game, every time he got the ball and tried to attack, they swarmed him. And he had to make it, him and Larry, they made a conscious effort to swarm them as they get to the basket or into the paint.
And make everybody else beat them, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just like they're working too hard, especially on the back-to-back, working way too hard. I'm watching their offense. Their offense doesn't get set until late in the shot clock, which forces a hero ball. There's not enough player movement. There's not enough ball movement. And there's not, it's just not efficient basketball. So out of every 10 possessions, if you're scoring 3 or 4 or even 5 times, it's still not good enough against the top-tier teams who are executing their offense at a 7 out of 10 or 8 out of 10 clip. Like that game against Cleveland the night before, they were up 107-101, I believe, with like 3 minutes to go. Right? Had the game in hand. All they had to do was stay steady and execute down the stretch. And Cleveland came right back. Championship experience.
Yeah.
I do believe they're in the top tier or that second tier, but they're not at the elite. I believe they're the second best team in the East. I do believe that.
Yeah.
I think with the additions of Sollinger, he will definitely help. I believe today was Siakam plays well for them.
Yeah, he really does.
He's a bright spot.
He really does.
He's definitely a bright spot. I just right now, a lot of teams in the East have a lot of new players that have to get acclimated to a new system and find each other's rhythm and stuff. So I think that with Toronto having this, they have pretty much the same core as last season, is an advantage, and so they're ahead of other teams right now. And I think it'll definitely help them in the early stages of the season in the sense of distancing themselves from the pack. Because right now, you see, you have a lot of teams that are close to 500, just above or right in the middle or just under, trying to find their identity and trying to find their rhythm as a team. So I think Raptors, right now, this is a good learning experience to build upon, to see where they are at and what adjustments can be made to close that gap.
But you touched on something, though, that I'll get into, but first off, I mean, man, the NBA was cruel with their schedule, huh?
Yeah, scheduling was tough.
Yes, scheduling Cleveland and Golden State on back-to-back nights. I mean, geez, that's
as tough as you get. But someone's going to go through it. Like it's back-to-back. Everyone has to go through it.
No doubt. Everybody has their back-to-back, but the back-to-back against those two teams,
that's
a tough test. Yeah. At least you get it out of the way in November. So you know, as you said, you can build and learn from that. But to touch on something what you're saying with DeRozan about the Raptors. With DeRozan having to work so hard to score, but I feel like that's just their whole team. I just think when you watch, especially when they play Cleveland. And how Cleveland executed, especially at the end when they got the lead. And I think there was about 30 seconds left. And LeBron inbounded the ball to Kevin Love. And he ran around him, got a screen, hooked around. And the play was so perfectly executed. By the time he got to the basket, the ball was waiting for him.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, when I saw that, I was just like, man, I wish the Raptors can operate a sequence that easy, you know, on a consistent basis. And that's what championship teams do. And I think that's the next level we got to get to.
I think I agree with you 110%. I just feel that the offense is so rudimentary. It's so basic, and it's not conducive to success, especially in the playoffs when you play these guys 4 times, 6 times each. And you know what they're running, but they just, no matter what, they're going to execute down the stretch.
Yeah.
I find they didn't go inside. Valanciunas was a 6-for-6 from the field at halftime. And I'm like, he should be shooting more. If he's the third option, DeRozan and Lowry are taking pretty much over 20 shots per game. Valanciunas should be taking at least 15 shots. Him going off gives them stability inside, so they know they can go to him. It opens the lanes because guys are going to start doubling, and he can just pass out the double teams to cutters. It's just they need to simplify the game a little bit more, get more ball movement, because the ball doesn't move.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I don't understand, like this is like year three now, because you're starting to see Jonas improve. Each and every year, the last 3 years, he's had some sort of significant improvement. And we still, like, he still doesn't get that trust. Because even I was watching the Raptors play on Saturday against the Knicks. It's funny because at a certain point, I'm like, wait a minute. Why is Bebe still in this game? And late in the fourth quarter, I'm like, when the hell did Jonas get hurt? And then I had to pull up my phone and look, and I realized I'm like, no, he's still active. But I'm like, man, they're still doing this. Like, he still doesn't earn that trust to play in the second half. I don't know what he has to do. Does he have to pay guys off? It doesn't make any sense. But he should clearly be their third best player. I mean, he is, but he doesn't get utilized that way. You know, only like in the playoffs. You know, at certain points when they really need him. But it's like at some point you got to build this guy's confidence.
They need someone to space the. They need a steady 3-point shooter, like a gunner. They need a gunner.
Right.
I found Patterson. I noticed he's not shooting at the clip he was when he first came here. I noticed he's not even jumping on his jumper. So it's like, I don't know if he has a leg problem or something, but you can see he's not getting he's overshooting. He's trying to shoot with his arms rather than shooting with his whole body, using his legs and arms. So he's either undershooting it or he's overshooting it. I noticed he's tailed off a bit.
I agree. He's got no lift on his J. Definitely.
Yeah, no lift whatsoever. And he could tell before he was a jump shooter, especially from the three, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know if there's an injury that's not spoken about, but he just doesn't seem like he's getting that lift. And he's not hitting these key shots. He's wide open.
No, I definitely agree with that.
They need someone to space the floor a little bit more. But I don't know. It'd be interesting to see what moves they make. I'm interested to see how if Terrence Ross can be more consistent, can be a consistent contributor off the bench. If he could be like score over 10 points and play good defense and do his thing, I think he has a lot of potential. But you know,
because he started off playing pretty well this year too. So
he lacks consistency. That's the thing with him.
No,
and so I think that's more a mental thing than anything else.
Yeah, because he has the tools to be a good player, you know. But it's just I don't know, for some reason he just hasn't put it all together yet.
It's just the mentality he has. He definitely gets the opportunities, but which doesn't, you know. I just don't understand why he can't bring it on a consistent basis. Because if he does that, he gives them another. It's another dimension to the team that they can count on. Because last year their bench was strong. Especially defensively. So if they were down, they could keep them in the game or even bring them to take the lead.
Yeah.
That second unit were monsters, on especially at the defensive end. So.
Yeah, so it's going to, like I said again, I think this was a good test for them to see where they are and kind of measure themselves as to where they need to go the rest of the season. So that's why it's, you know, that's a good part of this. You know, at the same time, it's like it shows you, okay, that they're not at that Cleveland, Golden State, San Antonio, or even where the Clippers are playing right now. They're not at that level just yet. You know, but like I said again, it's something that they do have to fix, and they do have to get to a point where they're scoring easier baskets, because as you said in the playoffs, that they're gonna get worn down. You know, but as far as everything's concerned, though. You gotta love DeMar DeRozan's elevation right now as a player.
Yeah. Without a doubt, there's no doubt about it. I don't like it. You know, I listened to a couple different podcasts and stuff like that, and none of these analysts are giving him the respect and the notoriety that he deserves. I think, and I just think he just has to keep plugging away and keep doing it, and people will definitely start taking notice of it. I think he's got attention of a lot of people, but not the respect.
Yeah, so, I think that's could also be just a Toronto thing, just in the fact that
probably, because they're not respected. Yeah,
yeah, they're not in the States, so it's just, you know, even though it's as popular and as big as the city is, you know, they're still tucked away in a sense. So it's so it's like, oh, he's averaging such and such. Oh, that's probably an anomaly. You know, maybe that'll come down.
Yeah.
But it's funny because usually, anytime there's not so much the world championships, but usually when the Olympics happen, there's always a player or two, especially from the U.S. team, that comes back the next season super prepared, or their game just jumps a level. And this year, you know, it seems like right now it's DeRozan, and you know the Raptors get to definitely benefit from that.
But once again, it's like you're wasting it. It's not, you know what I'm saying? Like you're wasting it when you're not putting a good offense around him. Yeah. For him, like, it's too much hero shots, man. The one thing I like about him is that he gets to the line and he makes them pay from the line. I think it was like 15 for 15 last time I checked.
Yeah, he's one of the best. He's one of the best at definitely getting to the line. To me, he's putting up stats like I was telling somebody this the other day. He's putting up stats like an elite level two guard from the 80s. Meaning the fact
he's a throwback. He's definitely a throwback.
Definitely a throwback player. Meaning like he's not. He might take one or two threes a game, maybe, you know, but everything else is mid range and to the basket and living at the line, you know, which I definitely appreciate that, you know, but it's funny because I'm at the point where it's like I'm looking at this and I'm expecting this hot streak to kind of come down a little bit, meaning like I right now he's leading the league with 34 points a game. I don't think that's sustainable, but
it's
definitely not sustainable, but I also think that the level of play that he's playing this year, the way the game has really slowed down for him, I think that's sustainable. You know, I think that's definitely sustainable for him. Now, as we keep mentioning, will the offense change to kind of enhance the way the game has slowed down for him? You know, we got to see. But right now, you know, I think and this is another reason why I kind of like how Lowry's playing this year, too. I think he's kind of just, even though it's in his contract year, he's not coming in with the mentality where, yo, I got to get 25, you know, like 5 and 10 type of thing. He's kind of riding out what DeMar's doing, you know, by just running the offense, playing great defense, and just being a great elite point guard right now, you know, finding his shots when he can.
I think he's proven himself as one of the top point guards in the league.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I think the team success will definitely will help his situation into a multi-year contract. I think he's already proven. He's a gritty guard that plays on both ends, which is very hard in this day and age. He's a pit bull on defense. I think right now, the success of the team will definitely solidify a multi-year contract for him, more so than him going out scoring points right now.
Now, here I'll ask you this question then. Because he's in line to get a max contract for the Raptors now, especially with the cap going up.
Yeah.
He's in line to possibly get a $200 million contract with Toronto. 5 years, $200 million.
Yeah.
Would you sign him to that contract?
No. No.
You wouldn't do it? Why not?
No. Well,
it's tough. It's a tough situation, but I want to hear your point. Why as to why?
I think he's definitely worth the money for what he brings to the table, but if there's more pieces that need to be made to added to the team, if you sign him to that contract, then you're pretty much saying like this is the best. You're acknowledging to the league and to the Cleveland Cavaliers that this is the best that we could actually go. We're okay with coming in second and coming in the finals for the Eastern Conference. But if your championship aspirations and they need a third player who's an all-star caliber player. If that's someone outside of Valanciunas, I don't think they give the ball to him, so I don't think he's going to be an all-star this year.
Yeah.
Personally, but they need someone else. What's his name? He played today. What's his name from injury? What's his name again?
So from where?
The free man for the Raptors. What's his name?
Oh, Damari Carroll.
Yeah, the Carroll. he's been injury prone.
Yeah, I know.
Right now, it's looking like that contract wasn't a good signing.
No,
you got him for playing defense on pretty much like the likes of LeBron and Carmelo and KD.
Yeah, nice like tonight.
Yeah, and he couldn't do it because he's injury prone. He hasn't put a good stint of games. Like you can see today, he's just trying to find his rhythm, and that's gonna take a week or two.
Yeah, so,
get his legs underneath him and everything, right? So,
right.
I don't know. It's still early. But to answer your question, I wouldn't give in to him the $200 million because if I have championship aspirations, I'm looking to probably get another high top caliber player to align with these guys because it's going to take someone like that to at least compete with the Cleveland Cavaliers.
And I totally agree with you. But here's the part that's interesting. What he's accomplished in this contract that he has, it warrants him getting a max contract, right?
Yeah.
Just in terms of, you know, him making he's probably going to be in his third straight All-Star game, you know, most likely as long as Canada puts in the same kind of voting intensity that China did for Yao Ming. He's going to start again in his third All-Star game. You know, he's got mm-hmm. an All-NBA tag under his belt and an Olympic gold medal. Just basically, just on that alone, warrants a max contract. Now, the hiccup is the fact that, you know, by the time this season ends, he's going to be 31 years old, you know. But the thing is, if he leaves, my two questions is, number one, what do you replace him with? Number two, if he goes. Number two, he's going to get the max contract pretty much anywhere he goes.
Anywhere he goes. Yeah.
So that's the problem. So it's like, what do you pay him, and can you talk him down in the price a little bit, knowing if you can probably get somebody else to come? I don't know.
I'll try talking down and see where that goes.
Yeah,
as all said, obviously as a player, you're going to try to get as much as you can while you can, while you're at your peak, right?
Right. No, of course.
It's about getting three or four max contracts and within your career, and solidifying your legacy and your family. I get it. But from a general manager standpoint and owner standpoint, if you're, you know, you want to be in the playoffs deep runs, you're going to need that player. And, like, I think they're going to plateau. If they sign it, they're going to plateau. Because I don't know what it's going to take for Dwayne Casey to come up with better offensive sets. It's just ugly.
Well, that's the tough part because, again, it's if he leaves, then you know that you're also taking a step back as a franchise, right?
Yeah,
especially if you don't replace him with the same type of caliber of a player to come back and, you know, like in return of him to replace him. So it's like what do you do in that situation? And the $200 million, it's an astronomical price, but because of the way the salary cap is right now, every max player that has his resume is going to get at least $200 million or more. You know, at this point, this is like past baseball money now. So that's the crazy part. So as astronomical as we're looking at the price and thinking that's insane to pay somebody, you know, a lot of players in his position right now is going to get that money. So it's like, what do you do? But because you see what DeRozan signed for, he signed for $140 million. That's the thing. It's tough because it's, you know, because of what he can. I mean, he's opting out this year. Because he knows what his value is, you know what I mean? So he's not stupid. So that's the thing. Yeah. It's tough, man. It's tough. Like, I would say sign him, but it's tough to sign him to you know, a max deal. But in terms of, like, it's tough.
If I know I'm going to lose him, then I'm going to have to throw some money out of his way. But, I mean, what's better for the team's aspect down the stretch to make that championship run, I'll definitely try talking down to for the greater good of the team. Definitely.
Yeah.
From a, like, player standpoint, you get it. GM standpoint, it's a different ballgame. You know?
Oh, no, of course.
He seems to be making the right moves in the right manner. So I believe in what he's trying to do, accomplish. So I guess time will tell. But I feel, I'll say this. If Terrence Ross doesn't solidify himself consistency, I believe he's gone by the trade deadline. They'll trade him.
Yeah, I think they kind of have to. I think they should still be looking right now. The fact that he's starting to play well, I think right now it's putting him on the hot seat to get traded. Because I think what slowed it up before was the fact that he's so inconsistent. But the fact that he's playing well, if he can keep that until I think it's December 15th when he can actually start trading players during the season, then yeah, I think I can see him getting flipped right at that point. Whatever you can get out from him would be great, you know, in terms of, especially if you can get somebody that can really be more consistent and help right away, that would be awesome. But at the end of the day, you know, when I'm looking like towards the future and just seeing where, just how far the Raptors have gone the last like 3-4 years and how the culture's changed, Lowry again is like the pillar of that culture. So it's like, do you tear that down because of the money? You know what I mean? But I see your point at the same time. It's, you know, but it's like, you, if you sign him, you're pretty much resigned to this team like, for the next three to 4 years.
Think about it this way. Last year, they got a taste. You want to get that taste again? Okay, you got a taste. You're on uncharted territory, right? In the sense of all those players haven't never gone that far, especially to even to the second round. I was on uncharted territory. Right. Then they got to the conference final. They got there. They want to, now this year is to get back there and try to make a serious run.
Right.
Right. So this is the pros and cons that Masai is going to have to battle with himself and how to move in the right direction for the team. You're going to, if you sign to a max contract, I think they plateau personally.
But it's funny because I think you do have to sign him back just because for years, you don't want the drop off, number one. And then two, just to show other teams and players, not teams, but so much like other free agents in the future, you know, we're serious about winning because we're not going to let one of our prime, you know, all-star slash all-NBA players, superstars, basically leave. You know what I mean? Like, like we're not willing to let a guy like this go and we're committed to winning. You know, and you know, that's the thing. Like, when you're winning, it attracts people to come, right? And I'm not just, you know, and Toronto's always had the hardest issue with Toronto has always been just attracting free agents to come here. But if you're consistently going to the conference finals each and every year, you're keeping the structure in place. I mean, you never know. And that's the thing. And that's the thing with sports too, right? We understand that, yes, Cleveland is the best team and you know, in the East and Golden State is, you know, pretty much one of the strongest teams, if not the strongest team in the West, especially adding Durant to what they already had. But at the same time, it's like, we don't know how things lay out. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, 3-4 years ago, we thought Miami was going to run the decade, right? And then we thought OKC was going to be matching up shot for shot with them every year.
Don't get me wrong, I was going for Cleveland. When they're down 3-1, I kept saying one game at a time, one game at a time. But like realistically, no one thought that Cleveland would come back, especially under those circumstances. But they did it. Said anything? You're right. Anything can change.
But, you never know. Like with the Raptors, yeah. I would try to keep it in place because again, you just with experience, you know, cohesiveness, like just the continuity of everybody being there. You never know what might happen. What if LeBron gets hurt? Changes everything, right? Like we don't know. We don't know what might hold things down. You know, like I said, OKC a few years ago, I mean, they had three of the top five players that's in the NBA right now, all in the same team. And now they only got one. You know, so it's like we don't know what might happen. So, you know, I think with the Raptors, I think it's one of those things. I think you just gotta keep plugging away. You know, I'm not sure if you dismantle that because of what you don't want to pay Lowry. It's, like I said, unless you're getting back an all-star of his caliber right back in his place, it's tough to go backwards, especially now that not just the players, but now the city has got accustomed to winning again, you know, especially with the Blue Jays winning you know, it's like now it's like you're getting a taste of that again. You know, it's like, do you really want to give that up to be struggling to make the playoffs?
It's been a long while since all teams have did long runs. The TFC's doing well.
Yeah.
Blue Jays. Leafs look like they're trying to get going. It'll be interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
It'll be interesting.
Definitely, for sure. So, you know, obviously the season is it's pretty new, 2 weeks in. What's some of the players or teams that's caught your eye so far this season?
I like... Well, obviously, I like what Cleveland's doing. That championship hangover isn't really affected them. You can see the influence of LeBron on that team, keeping everyone focused. Clippers look pretty good.
They look really good, actually.
Yeah. Atlanta, quite surprisingly, is doing quite well. I didn't expect them to come out the gates as well as they were. I thought it would be a little bit of an adjustment period for them. Out in the West, I like Utah. I know they're kind of in the middle of the pack there, but I like they look very confident and they believe. I believe they'll make a good run into the Western
Western Conference. And listen, Gordon Hayward, man, that boy's balling like an all-star. Like since he's come back off that finger injury, he's looked like a straight up all-star. Honestly.
Yeah. He's been like he looked like he's comfortable. They got a good core, and they added some veterans there, which will definitely is going to help them. The Thunder, I thought quite surprisingly, I didn't expect them to be doing this well. But it's a one-man show right now, and it's like, I believe Westbrook is like, how long can this last? He overexerts himself.
You talk about a player that works hard for his baskets. Holy shit.
Yeah, but it's like it's just relentless pursuit to get to the basket and just score. It's unreal. I don't think we've ever seen anyone like. I think Derrick Rose, athletically at the point guard position, is the closest to him or was.
Yeah,
you haven't seen this type of explosion, aggression. Like the aggression is very similar to like the likes of Kobe and Jordan, especially when they were in their young years.
Yeah.
But man, oh man, this guy is relentless.
But the thing that freaks me out with Westbrook, though, again, you talk about Derrick Rose. Like, Derrick Rose is blown out. You know, you already know what happened to Rose with regards to his injuries. But when it comes to Westbrook, I mean, Westbrook is a guy that tore his knee twice too. And I don't understand how this guy tore his knee 2-3 times, and he seems like he's more athletic than before.
It's
like he's a specimen. It's funny. Athletically, he reminds me a lot of. I know you appreciate this name. He reminds me a lot of Sprewell. Remember how Sprewell was back before he choked out his coach? Yeah. He was just an animal, just all the time. Yeah. Like that's what he reminds me of. But in a point guard role, you know.
I agree.
Like he was maniacal. Like Sprewell was maniacal. You know, like he was just like Westbrook. But Westbrook doing it from the point guard position is something that we've never seen. Yeah,
never seen before. No,
it's nuts.
And like I watch him like against other point guards. It's funny to see how defenses try the hard. He's so effective one to get that stopped, and then he's just fast breaking it right back. He's running it right back down the defense's throat. The guys are like, he's the point guard. The defending point guard is out of the equation. It's the rest of the teammate, the rest of the team adjusting to try to get back into the paint to fog it to him. it's hilarious to see these guys try to get back and try to keep up with him. It's amazing. I gotta give it to him. It's what he's doing. It's quite remarkable. Will it last? I don't see it.
Well, and that's the thing I even mentioned in previous podcasts before that as great as he is and as much as the triple doubles and the stat stuffing that he does. At the end of the day, when you like even with everything that he does, it doesn't necessarily translate into wins. So even that time when Durant was hurt a couple of years back and he went on that triple double tear, they were horrible on defense and they didn't win a lot of games. I'm forecasting that same trend for him. Like he's gonna put up amazing stats. You know, like you're gonna see stuff that you've probably never seen before in a lot of cases. But I still see them struggling to make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I still do. You know what I mean? And it's funny, after the last podcast we did, the Western Conference preview, I got hit up by a few people like, oh, what you got to say now about, you know, OKC? They're up 3-0. They start off the season 3-0. Now they're 6-5. It's a long season. So, you know, like, I'm not going to gloat on that fact because, we just hit November 16th.
They're 7-5, actually, to be honest with you.
Oh, 7. Okay. So I guess they won tonight. But either way, like, but I think that they're going to struggle. You know what I mean? Like, I still think they're going to struggle throughout the season. I don't like all those stats because at the end of the day, as much as, you know, you like, he's got to shoot and take all the shots that he can take, but it's hard when your point guard is taking that many shots at the same time. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. especially when they don't have like a Durant around him and stuff. And on top of that, with that too, like, he's going to get frustrated too, because on top of everything else, he's not going to be accustomed to the wins accumulating. You know what I mean? Because mm-hmm. at the end of the day, like, when he was, even when he's playing well or whatever, you know, you had Durant with you, so, and Ibaka and certain guys with you. So, you know, those wins, you're still getting 50, 60 wins every year. It's going to mm-hmm. be, it's going to be a little different of a mind shift when, you know, you're struggling to get 45.
Yeah, I know.
You know, so how does he adjust to that?
That's why, once again, you gotta develop trust with the players. You have to, there was a couple of games. He's shown good leadership. As you know, this is his team, obviously. He's shown great leadership. I've seen some times where last year he would spaz out, but I think he's trying to keep a calm about him.
Yeah.
But once again, he has to develop the trust. And Stephen Adams, he's gonna need his the rest of his teammates. I don't think they're good enough to sustain that, so that's where he has to resort to hero ball and just pushing his body to the outer limits.
Yeah.
But it'll be interesting to see how it unfolds. Like, once again, you know, the Western Conference, there's the Clippers are 10-1, San Antonio's 8-3, Houston 6-5, Portland 7-5. So you can see, like, certain teams, especially in the top tier in the Western Conference, are starting to distance themselves from the middle of the pack.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, San Antonio, they're like, you know, they're a well-oiled machine. They're going to only get better as time goes on. So I'm interested to see how they acclimate with life without Tim Duncan. So it's kind of weird watching them play and him not even coming off the bench or anything. I know. Seeing him there.
20 years, you know? Man. He got so used to seeing that for 20 years.
Yeah. Golden State's doing their thing. You can see them. They're getting better. It's just that, it's just defensively, if there's a weakness, they don't have that muscle defensively, that they still haven't found that. I think they're still trying to find their identity defensively. You right. can see the efforts there. They're trying to have a better defensive scheme. You can see that trying to be implemented.
Yeah.
But physically, if you just pound them, they just don't have that muscle.
But you know what? I want to talk about a couple of players here. Try to move this on just a little bit quickly. So I'm not totally surprised by what I'm seeing from James Harden this season, to be honest with you. Just because when you hook up with somebody like Mike D'Antoni, who's an offensive wizard, you know, and as well as with all the skill set that he has, I'm not really surprised by the explosion. You know, just he's doing James Harden things. Like, that's what James Harden does. But I am surprised by the assist total. But for him to be leading the league in scoring, I mean, yeah, I thought that was kind of crazy. Because I know in the beginning of the year, Mike D'Antoni was saying that he wants him to be the next Nate Archibald, which means that he wants him to lead the league in scoring and assists, which mm-hmm. a lot of people mm-hmm. thought he was crazy. Even James Harden said, man, yo, coach is tripping, man. Like, what's coach talking about? But right now, I mean, it's definitely sustainable the way he's playing and the way that offense is set up and the fact that he has the ball in his hands all the time. Now, I'm not – see, that's the thing. James Harden has always been – he's always been a great passer, even from the OKC days. Like, he was the one that was running the offense and having, you know, Russ and especially Russell Westbrook play off the ball. And he was the one that was basically facilitating everything at OKC before he got traded. And mm-hmm. I think in the last couple of years, he put on his he definitely had the Bel Air Prep uniform underneath his Rockets jersey because, you know, he loved to shoot a shot. You know, but I think this offense kind of let him settle back into that mode where he can still score, because that's the thing. He's a great scorer, and you're not going to be able to stop him from doing that. He has an elite talent there of getting buckets. But at the same time, you know, like I said, again, he's always been a good passer. So I think this offense really utilizes his talents. It's crazy to see.
I think definitely let's give props to Coach D'Antoni. He is an offensive genius. He always has been, especially with the likes of having great point guards like Steve Nash in the past, and now Harden. He definitely had you could see it in coming off the bench for OKC. He was the point guard, especially when he came on. They were firing on all cylinders when he was running the point, being a facilitator to both Westbrook and Durant. So yeah, you saw that coming. But D'Antoni's offense. Like, once again, you take a player like Harden, you give him a good offensive structure, a system as a base to add onto his superstar skills, and you see, and the proof is in the pudding, yeah. Right? You know what I'm saying? And so this doesn't surprise me one bit. I knew that his numbers were going to be astronomical in the sense of the assists. I think it's remarkable. But once again, offensively, they're amazing, but their problem is defensively, and they can't stop no one.
They're like one of those football teams that, like, that you know, like, you have a quarterback, he throws for 60 TDs, but the other team scores seven, you know?
Yeah. it's fool's gold, really.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's always been said, defense wins championships. You got to be able to defend. You got to pose some type of resistance to the offense. Take them out of the rhythm, some type of uncomfortable feeling for them to score. And once it's a free lane to the basket, it's not a good, like, you're going to win some games offensively because of the offensive execution that they have, but defensively, it's piss poor.
Yeah.
No. You know what I mean? It's not good.
Not good enough. They're just like, offense is overrated. Just stand there. Don't worry. They'll miss at some point.
Yeah.
Like, that's how, that's how they're approaching it. But that's the thing. Like, it's even with the Showtime Lakers back in the day, those teams, even as much as they were freewheeling and on offense and on the fast break and everything else, they still had periods where they played D, and they still had periods where they shut you down, you know, at certain points, because you can't run a fast break without getting the ball, right? Like, you know what I'm saying? Without making a stop. So it's like, as much fast breaks as they ran, it that had to be, it wasn't because, you know, the other team scored so much, it just quickly inbounded it every single time. It's because they played enough defense where they got other teams to miss shots or turn over the ball, and they're off and running every single time, you know. So that's the thing. Like, you still have to commit at some point to defense. So he's got to get D'Antoni's. I've always said I love that he's innovative and you know, like on offense, he's one of the greatest innovators in the last like 15, 20 years in the NBA. And he's kind of changed the culture of how offenses are run in the league. But at the same time, I think he's stubborn, you know, in the way that he runs his system. Because, you know, after all these years, how do you not implement some sort of defensive schemes and systems in there? Or be like a football coach and just have like a defensive coordinator if you have to do that, you know what I mean? And just concentrate on the offense. I mean, sorry, concentrate on the defense. Because at certain points, like, even in those teams with Phoenix, actually, well, Phoenix, even they played a little defense too. I swear they played more than what you've seen in the last few years from the teams that he's coached with the Knicks and even this situation.
Definitely.
You know, like, there's got to be a certain point where it's like, okay, for these next 5 minutes, you know what? You're not getting a basket. You know, maybe you got it for the first 43, but you know, these next 5 minutes, no, you're not getting this.
Yeah.
And I think it's.
What I also got to give praise for is Steve Kerr, because Steve Kerr pretty much took his model and refined it.
Yeah.
Right? And made it better.
Yeah.
And kept the core principles of, like, pace and space, ball movement, player movement, cuts, because Golden State's offense is, it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's the cuts. There's a set play, but they have so many different variations off of it, or options, depending on how the defense reacts. And these guys all have a high level of basketball IQ where it's the options are endless.
Yeah.
Right? So it works. But what made them championship team was the defense. They had the right pair of people that were multi-skilled, that could play both ends of the floor, that could shoot, they could pass, they could score, they could move without the ball. They have good court vision, and they have good basketball IQ, and it worked.
And unselfish, right.
And unselfish, right? It'll be interesting to see how well they do, especially in the Western Conference, but I just don't see, on a consistent basis, I guess, the top-tier teams, they're going to come up short every time. I know they beat San Antonio by one in San Antonio. Consistently, I don't think they're going to... I don't know. I don't see them as a top-four team in the West.
We're talking about Houston, right?
Houston, yeah.
Yeah, no, I definitely don't see. I see them. It's funny. In the preview that we had, I actually had them out of the playoffs personally. But
Oh yeah,
I did personally.
Make the playoffs. I think they'll make the playoffs.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me, but I don't think they're gonna get a high seed though. Just because again, like at a certain point of the year, like if the defense doesn't improve, if they make the playoffs, I can't see them getting a high seed because of the, if they continue to do what they do on offense and they get to like even if they get to like the middle of the pack on defense, now that's a different story. Now you can see them scraping for the fourth seed. But
okay, as of right now, you have the Clippers, Golden State, San Antonio, Portland, Oklahoma City, Utah, Lakers, and Houston at the 8th seed, tied with Memphis. Oh, sorry, yeah, they're at the 8th seed. Memphis is a half game behind them, right? So a lot can happen between now and the playoffs, obviously.
Yeah, of course.
We're in the first quarter of the NBA.
Of course.
But I do believe they will make a run. I think the Lakers is another team that surprised me.
Oh, man, yeah.
That's just the importance of coaching, influence, getting players to buy in and to believe. Luke Walton is proven.
Yeah.
There's no question that. Is this a flash in the pan? Who knows? It's still the first quarter of the NBA, so we'll see. I see maybe in another 2 more weeks you'll have a better understanding if these guys are really for real. But at this stage, you've got to give them some type of acknowledgement because no one saw this coming. Not this early.
No, definitely not at all. Here's what I'll say. This like they benefit from three things, and I'll put it in order that's allowing them to basically grow and breathe. Number one, Kobe leaving.
Yep, big time.
Which you know it might sound crazy to some people. When I say some people, I mean Lakers fans, but. You know, honestly, this guy was still being treated like a god, even though he was half the player that he used to be. The second part of it was Coach Byron Scott. Listen, man, he was an abomination last year. And I don't care what anybody says. His old I love old school ways in terms of some of the values and things that you
he
can learn from
relate.
That. But yeah, he couldn't relate. Exactly. He stole the words right out of my mouth. Yeah. Like his style of coaching, especially the way he treated Nick Young and D'Angelo Russell, at least on the floor, as well as Julius Randle at times, it stifled their progression, especially D'Angelo Russell and Young. And now, of course, you know, you've seen the things that D'Angelo's done. So it kind of warrants he might have a little bit of, you know, maturity issues in that sense. So, you know, so you can see that I understand that part of it. But at the same time, I'm just like, listen, man. When Kobe was, nobody was cockier than Kobe at 17, 18 years old when he first came in the league. You know what I mean? And he got minutes, you know, and he was playing on a contender at the time, you know, but he still got minutes. So the fact that this team wasn't a good team. I'm like, what are you holding him back for? Just play Russell, you know, and the times where he had the ball in his hands and Kobe wasn't there. Yo, the guy did work, you know, So to me, it's like, and I guess the third part of it is, you know, Luke Walton, as you mentioned, like he's basically allowing his players to be free and be themselves. And yeah, I think they're just going to be entertaining to watch every night. I still think, you know, you just mentioned that they're in the top eight, you know, for the playoff seedings. I expect them to fall from that, you know, as time goes along. Like they're definitely going to be one of the teams that dips out from that, I think. But I mean, they're not only are they entertaining, like the fact that, and I think I think I heard Kenny Smith mention this, and it's a good point, but the fact that they don't have a guy that's a superstar right now, like helps them because when they go to their second unit, they're just as good as their first unit.
There's not much of a drop off.
No, not much.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like Russell is amazing. I think that kid's a stud. I've said it before, but. There's not much of a drop off between the two, so it's like you're getting the same level for 48 minutes.
Production, yeah.
You know, so it's definitely sweet to see. So yeah, they've been like the biggest surprise for me of the season so far, at this early season. Are we gonna talk about Joel Embiid just a little bit?
Sure. Yeah, man. I'll let you. You want me to start, or you want to?
Well, no. I mean, listen, man. I've been sold on Embiid since he was at Kansas. I've been waiting for this guy, like I've been waiting for him forever, man, to come to the NBA. And
yeah,
it's funny, man. The guy has all the tools, and it's funny because there was a highlight I watched, and I remember this a couple of years back when he was at Kansas, and somebody took a shot, and he got the rebound, he backed the guy up, he gave him the dream shake, up and under, and he went, and he did a reverse layup. When I saw that, I was like, Jan right there, I was like, okay, so done. You know, where's the check? Let me sign it. It's over. It's a wrap. I got it. You know what I mean? Like, I was on his bandwagon from that move alone. Because I'm fact that this guy is, you know, he just basically started playing, and he's already doing elite level moves like that.
Moves.
You know, and then you're seeing it. Like, this guy, right now, he's on pace to be the third player in NBA history to average 2 blocks and a 3-pointer. Along with everything else he's doing. And the guy's putting up full game stats, and he's only playing like 20 minutes a game so far. He's still in a minutes restriction.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's definitely a special breed in the sense of the skill sets he brings at that height. He's very, considering, like, what, this is technically his third year, right?
Yeah.
So what he did was basically work on his game, heal, work on his game until he was able to get on the court. I think being injured for so long made him really appreciate the game and the other nuances of it. And I think that he's on the floor, he's just taking advantage of it. And the hard, I believe, you know, one of the things I tell the kids I coach is that hard work never goes unnoticed.
Yeah.
And it's proof positive right there. And he's a matchup problem. He's 7 feet. He's very agile.
Strong
as hell.
He can stretch
the floor. He can pass the ball. He can put the ball on the floor. He can lead the fast break. He can block shots. He can rebound.
And he's a bull.
So he's a stat stuffer.
Yeah, and he's strong as hell. He's a bull at the same time.
Exactly. And he's only going to get better.
Yeah.
Can he stay healthy is the question. That's the only question stunting his progression and his evolution.
Yeah.
As a player.
Yeah, because
is that foot, can it hold up? Because a player at that magnitude, moving as gingerly as he does, you gotta have some concerns. So obviously, he's in the NBA, he's with the Philadelphia 76ers. The organization has top tier doctors around the clock that's working on him to make sure he's fine. But can that foot, those feet, can they handle the rigors of the NBA?
Yeah.
You know?
Because honestly, right now, I mean, it's only been 2 weeks, but he's completely made Nerlens Noel and Jahlil Okafor, who's my guy, but they got to go.
Yeah.
Seriously, they got to go,
yeah.
You know, because like, and the thing is, it's going to be hard to flip those guys because I think everybody knows right now that they have to go, you know, especially if Embiid is going to start playing. We haven't even seen Ben Simmons come yet. You know, you got Saric, who's, you know, who's also 6'9", 6'10". He can either be a stretch four or he can, you know, do some work in the paint as well. But like I said, the way Embiid has been, he's blown past projections of what people thought he was going to be right off the top.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a shadow of a doubt, he's doing that.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what they do. Are they going to... Okay, so you have Okafor, you have Noel, you have Embiid. You have Simmons coming back from a broken leg soon. So you have a young nucleus. You have a new regime coming in. You have Colangelo pulling the strings from general manager standpoint. So it'll be interesting. Are they looking to make a fast track, or are they looking to gradually let this build? It'll be interesting to see what they do.
Yeah. And I mean, they're going to, you know, obviously I think they're missing a legitimate point guard. But at the same time, the way... I think once Ben Simmons gets his feet wet in the league, I don't know how much of a point guard you're really going to need. That guy is he's one of the best passers I've ever seen, and I've only watched the summer league games. But some of the passes
summer league games is fool's gold, my friend.
No, of course. But I'm just saying the court vision that he's already exhibited in those games.
I agree.
I don't think that's something you can teach. You know,
I agree.
Like some of the passes he's throwing, most point guards don't do that. You know, so I'm excited to see what happens with him. But honestly, right now, it's all about Embiid, man. I think that guy is. I'm starting to see like a bit of a small revolution with big men coming back. You know, like you're starting to see big men slowly starting to come back. Nobody's talking about it, but like some of these young big men, they can play, man.
I, I think the old age big man is slowly disappearing in the sense of back to the basket, rebound, run the floor, shot blocker, that's it, stay in the paint kind of guy.
Right.
That guy, the Shaquilles, the Alonzo Mournings, the Patrick Ewings, those guys, those old relics, the game is so fluent now. It's all about pace and space and being able to hit that mid-range jumper. Like DeMarcus Cousins is like a new age center in the sense of he has the core, in the sense of he has that backup game, the bruising game, but he's skilled, right? He's very agile for his size. He can handle the ball.
Oh my God,
he can shoot from the perimeter. He can pass the ball. His only Achilles heel is he's a hothead. He's mental toughness.
Yeah, the mental breakdowns.
Yeah,
that he has. But yeah, but you're right though. Like it's. The new age centers that are coming along now, outside of like, because you know you have your certain guys like the, you know, like the DeAndre Jordans and the Rudy Goberts who are you know pick and roll guys on offense, but also you know can, you know, they're locking down a paint on defense as well as you. I guess you can throw Whiteside in that too, but I think Whiteside's got a little bit more of an offensive game than those two, of course. And then you got guys like, you know, Karl-Anthony Towns. Anthony Davis is, you know, of course, as long as he can stay healthy. But they're more of that, like, they don't really, I mean, I wouldn't say they don't have an inside game, because they do as well, but it's not as domineering as everything else that they do. Well, actually, I shouldn't say that, because Towns' his offensive game is in the paint is nice as well. But like, when I look at Embiid, like, to me, he's kind of like that old school center, but he's also giving you that new school flair. You know,
yeah,
the fact that he can handle the ball. Yeah. Like I don't want to. I know people are throwing Olajuwon's name out there, and I don't want
to
throw.
You have to. There's no other way. There's no denying it. Plus, he's African. On top of that, listen, man, it's gonna happen. It's gonna happen. You can't deny that. You haven't seen a big man move that fluently around the basket. It's a no brainer.
Yeah,
it's too early,
and it's almost the same story too. The late start, the late bloomer start, the fact that they played soccer. It's scary.
But you see it in him. He wants to be great.
Yeah,
but you see the difference between him and Olajuwon. He's more of a personality.
Yeah,
he's more of an ego personified. So can he keep that ego in check? Time will tell.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
You know.
but it's true. I don't want to say it, man. But man, he's looking like my boy Olajuwon, man. It's
yeah. Oh, that like yeah. And it's just like wow. He's only gonna get better.
Yeah.
This is his first playing year, so he got a chance to travel the team, watch things, see schemes, how people are playing, you know, and just take notes for 3 years. For 2 years, pretty much.
Basically. And that's the thing. Like I know he's also on pace. He's basically averaging like 6 turnovers per 36 minutes, which will blow away the record, you know, if it maintains at that pace. But the thing is, I don't knock him for it because the guy hasn't played in almost 3 years or 3 years. So, you got to let the rust, you know, like you got to let the rust kick out of him a little bit. So I'm okay with that for now. Before we wrap up the podcast, I want to do something called sideline thoughts. It's something that I started actually when you were on my podcast the first time. So the last time we had you on, we ended off the podcast talking about the top 5 hottest women from The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Mm-hmm. So basically in keeping up with the TV show theme, I wanted to list off the favorite episodes of Martin, which I know that you're a humongous fan of. Now,
I have VHSs, buddy.
Yeah. Now, I'll admit right now, I'm being slightly ridiculous making you name your top 3 or top 5 episodes of Martin. Like, this is something easy to do, but, you know, I'm also a slightly ridiculous person sometimes. So, you know, we'll just roll with it. So, you know, who cares? So basically, I'll let you start first. What's your top 3 episodes of Martin?
Top 3. Okay. I don't have the exact episode names.
If you want, I'll even let you go top 5. But if you want,
I'll keep it simple because I grew up on that show. That show, like I lived that show. Like until I got a copy of it on my hard drive. I was still watching it just for old laughs, man. It was like hilarious to me.
Yeah,
I think that show was like out of all the family shows, black shows. I won't say black show, but as a family show, it was it was relatable for me at that time of age in the 90s. The music, the slang, the culture, the jokes. I was a big avid fan of Martin already, so it was already, and then the supporting cast just made the show. They all like just flowed together.
Yeah,
it was amazing to watch each week. My favorite, one of my favorite shows was the episode where Martin's Walkman went missing. Disman went missing, and he had a scene out of he copied a scene with Nino Brown. What's that movie, Nino Brown?
Is a CD, his CD Walkman went missing. That's right. He copied Nino Brown from New Jack City.
Yeah. It's breaking.
Sit your $5 ass down before it make change.
Huh?
That's a sit your $5 ass down before it make change.
Yes. There's a lot of Shemaine episodes. There was one episode where my mom and I were watching it, and it was when he was in character playing the security guard.
Oh, man.
And one guy came in trying to, young guy, try to rough him up at the shoe store.
In the shoe store.
Yeah. And he ended up beating up the guy and kicking him up, and my mom and I were dying. Oh, it was like to this day, we laugh about it. To this day, we laugh about it. That one was a favorite. And
I'm thinking about it now. It's making me laugh.
The third one would have to be maybe the Tommy Hearns one when he fought Tommy Hearns.
Yeah.
He got punched out the ring.
Yeah, and he had the lumps in his afro.
And he had his lumps. Yeah, he had a big head. Yeah, his head was swollen the next day.
Yeah.
Oh, there's also the pimp show he had. That was funny.
The players' ball one, yeah.
The what was it called? The players' ball.
Yeah, I think so.
That'll be my third one. I'll do that one.
But
that was good. What was his name? The character that we played the pimp.
Jerome.
Jerome. It was like him and some other guy were battling for the whole day. That was funny. All the jokes.
Yeah.
I would love to watch like bloopers of that show.
Oh, you know there's. And it's funny because even certain episodes that you watch, you can see the cast members like struggling to keep their laughter in.
Struggling to keep it together. Oh yeah, come on, with Martin, with Tommy, Pam, Sheena Arnold, and what's his name again?
Tisha Martin.
Cockroach from the Cosby Show. There, what's his name?
Yeah.
Carl Payne.
Yeah, for sure. That's a funny thing because that reminds me a lot of like Living Color, because Living Color used to be like that too, where there's certain scenes where it's like guys will have to hide behind each other while they're taping because they're laughing so hard.
Do you remember that Thursday lineup? It was Living Single, it was Martin
and New York,
and then it was Living Color after. Like Living Color was the last one that dropped the show.
No, it wasn't Living Color. It was New York Undercover.
Oh, New York Undercover. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah, man, that was the that was Black Thursdays, man. They used to call it back in the day. That was awesome. But touching on what you said with the shoe shopping episode, when I think that was the one where he got jealous of Gina's man, you know, her new friend Wallace was his name. I think it was Wallace or something like that. But that part with Otis at the beginning of the episode, which killed it, is the fact that. After he whooped the guy's ass, and he's like, you know, where you at? And then the guy came back up.
Yeah, he's looking for the guy. Yeah. That's the one. That's what I'm talking about.
A classic one. I can't. That whole episode is hilarious. But for me, I think my top three is when Martin boxed Tommy Hearns. That was one. Definitely the one where Martin fights a traffic ticket in court.
Yes.
Remember the one?
That was good.
And he tried to pull the race car out on the cop, and he was married to the black woman.
And his wife was black, yeah.
she fine, ain't she?
This is the year of the Geechee. What do you say? This is the year of the Geechee? Yeah.
And then, you know, there's so many episodes, man, but the other one was, in my top three, was the Miss Trinidad episode.
Oh yes, the teacher. Yes,
Beverly Johnson.
Oh,
that was a man. That was a classic episode, man. That was a classic.
Do you remember the school reunion? The old school reunion, the high school reunion one. That was good too, man.
Yeah, that one was hilarious too. And I mean, there's so many, because there's so honorable many, mentions. Yeah. There's the Varnell Hill episodes when he went back, yes, when he went to Hollywood to try to chase, yeah, you know, to chase how to be a superstar. The episode,
you know, when he first got the TV show, the first episode of the TV show, he had a TV show there, the talk show.
Oh yeah.
It was established. It was established at this time, and he had some crazy guests on there. Oh man, and the show got one. They had a Christmas special one year, and it got hijacked or something like that, a gunpoint or something. It was kind of weird.
Yeah,
there was a lot of different shows though, yeah, over the years.
Me, any episode with Leon, Lonnie Love,
yeah,
David Alan Greer, like any yeah, episode with him, yeah, it, you know, that was a shutdown moment for me. The one where Martin thinks Gina's cheating on him, and he shows up at her hotel room, and he beats up the maintenance man.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, there's so many, man. When they got snowed in at the
bus
station.
Do you remember the one with the radio station with Kim Fields?
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah. I remember that one. And he wanted to. What did he say? He wanted to knock her boots.
Yeah, you knock her boots from here to Afghanistan. What did he say?
Something like that.
Yeah,
something like that, man. But nah, it's funny because I mean, like, I want to keep up with the theme for that when you're on. But honestly, man, like, those were some great times, man. Watching Martin and me and the wife were watching that the other day, and I was just like, man, like, such a classic show, man. It's such a classic.
It was an iconic show. We didn't realize how good we had it until it was gone. That's what really happened.
Yeah.
Same with the '90s hip hop, but we won't go there. That's another podcast.
Yeah, I know. But it's for real though. Like I said, that Thursday night lineup was classic, man. And then when you throw in stuff like A Different World and like different shows,
there was
like that,
a whole slew of shows, but it was all relatable because it was shows that talked the topics that we're going through at that time.
Yeah,
it was seeing black people on TV that we weren't being shown, that we weren't being portrayed
as like honestly thugs or anything
at that
like
that time.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And those shows were the first ones to kind of pick us in a more positive light outside of being criminals and just athletes, right? So it was just a different look at it, different aspects of black people.
Yeah.
It was good.
Well, Mr. Nation, thanks once again for coming on. You know, we got to have you back at some point, you know.
Yeah, no worries, man. No worries. Thank you for having me. I definitely appreciate it. I don't mind. Love talking basketball and hearing other people's opinions as well as yours. I respect yours, even though I might agree. I definitely respect it. I appreciate the love, my brother.
Yeah, man.
And I look forward to another round.
Yes, no doubt. And are you going to get another award before we get you back on? Like, how's this going to
work? I'm good. Right now, I'm just coaching the kids and trying to play ball from a recreational standpoint. Other than that, life is good, man. No complaints from me here.
No doubt. Yes, sir. All right. Once again, thank you, man.
No worries. I appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me.
I'd like to thank Jan Michael Nation again for coming on the Av, as well as thanking all of you for continuing to listen to the Av podcast. To get your podcast and blog fix, make sure you subscribe to SouthShoreAv.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAv.com for all the podcast shows and all the write-ups. Also, I'd like to send a shout-out to my cuz, Zaria, on her career so far in track and field and embarking on the next phase of her life next year at the University of Maryland on a track scholarship. Make sure you go and you continue to strive for greatness. For Jan Michael Nation, my name is Cal C, and this is the Av Podcast on South Shore Av Radio. Until the next podcast, folks. Peace.